Development to lead our fundraising team. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Kester, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasane, and Tommy Warrenoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
Latino New Yorkers were 8 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis than white New Yorkers over the past 30 years. Black New Yorkers, 15 times more likely. White, black, or brown, data shows we all use cannabis at the same rate. Now New York has changed course and legalized cannabis for adults 21 and over. We are building an equitable industry that invests in communities. Learn more and visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, where the time is just about 6 o'clock. And I should also point out, we're broadcasting on 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the Internet, last I checked, at WUSB.FM. It's now 6 o'clock, time for another edition of Off the Wall. good evening. Everybody, the program is Off the Wall on this steamy July day. Luckily, there won't be many more of those because July is about to end. But the steaminess, I think, isn't. This is Emmanuel. Kyle over there.
Hi.
Ducking in and out today. You might be able to hear the fan. The fan is really loud today. But the fan is what brings the air into our studio. So, yeah, we'll just all kind of have to live with that, I guess.
I'm actually working on some side projects from a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
There were these kits, and I'm basically making sure they're packaged up so that we can make them available to people.
You've got a one-man assembly line out there. It's incredible.
Yeah.
The work you're doing.
But I don't want any of this to go to waste, so we're making sure that it's all just right, and then we'll make an announcement.
Waste not, want not.
No, especially cool stuff like this. So
yeah. It's very cool stuff.
Yeah, we're putting putting microcontrollers into the world.
Well, that's what we do. That's our lot in life. But Kyle, I wanted to show you one thing before.
I have to get back to the assembly.
That foreman is he's a hard ass.
I had a good pace going.
I know you did, but you get the bathroom break once every 6 hours, so you know.
I'm nearly
done.
And
this is it. So
all right,
I just wanted to show you this. You've seen this picture, right? That's
godforsaken place.
Yeah, in Port Jefferson again.
I hate that town. I mean, I like it.
Oh,
it's
don't
a cool
say that.
Town.
First of all, it's not a town.
Okay, there's
you
a lot
can
of
hate
villages.
It, but don't call it a town. It's a
whatever
village.
You want to call
it's
it.
It's a village.
Okay, make yourself feel important or valid. And, yeah, what's in a name? But it's like an armpit. Yeah,
Port Jefferson is like an armpit.
I mean, sort of, yeah.
Well,
a quaint armpit.
I don't know about that. I will say that the massive Trump banner, which is back
here. I'm not in love with it. I really
didn't.
Not.
I didn't.
I didn't say
that you should be in love with a village.
No.
Nobody should be.
No, I mean, there's lots of villages on this planet.
Uh-huh. That's true.
All right, I'm going to go back to the factory.
Maybe
Bye.
You should go back to the factory because you're in a mood there. But what I wanted to bring up, there's an article in the local newspaper, Village Times, Record, Beacon, whatever you want to call it, about this sign, which has come back yet again. It says, "In Trump, we trust." It's a massive sign. You can see it from the Port Jefferson Ferry. You can see it all over the place, every road that leads to Port Jefferson. And the reason it's up is because the guy who owns that land is an ardent Trump supporter. He claims free speech, but just try and put up something that does not agree with that and see how far free speech values go. I'm going to read some bits of this article. Lawsuit upheld in 2022, a local business owner's right to display a political banner, and now raises questions about municipal control over sign safety and aesthetics. Yes, the same sign in Trump We Trust is back up again. Now, back in 2013, and we discussed it on this program, then Port Jefferson Village Mayor Margot Garant had a problem. Proliferation of cheaply made signs cluttering the village's visual look. Some signs are made of flimsy plastic, press board, or haphazardly tacked up to storefronts. Some were waving in the breeze at risk of flying off a facade or airlifting skyward off a property lawn. Others were just unsightly. So the village code was revised to help business owners have more choices as a first step to cleaning up junky and unsafe signs. So anyway, in 2020, this guy George Wallace, not like the old racist guy from down south in the 60s. This is the old racist guy from Nisiquag up here on Long Island, and the name is spelled W-A-L-L-I-S, not W-A-L-L-A-C-E. That's pretty much the difference. But in 2020, it's George Wallace, our George Wallace, and the decades-long owner of the property, which houses the Frigate Ice Cream / Confectionery Store and the Steam Room, which is a restaurant in the village. They use their corner location to express his support for former President Donald Trump. This is what it's about, one person's support. Now, Wallace hung an oversized banner containing a political statement off the second-store balcony of the Frigate, a prominent spot at the bustling intersection of East Broadway and Main Street. The building is directly across from the Bridgeport and Port Jefferson Ferry Terminal, making the display hard to miss. Now, from the perspective of village officials, the banner violated several village sign requirements. Wallace did not apply for a permit. For one thing, the banner has huge proportions compared to the dimensions of the building, the two-story building. Banners affixed to buildings are not allowed per the code, and the pliable plastic material used does not comport with the aesthetic standards of the code, etc., etc., etc. Officials wanted it taken down. Now, basically, the village escalated the situation to a legal remedy in the courts in hopes that Wallace would back down, but instead, he hired a lawyer and fought the charges leveraged against his business entities. Basically, this legal battle has pretty much hamstrung the village's ability to enforce its sign code and established a legal precedent which might allow any person or business to erect a prohibited sign if the content is political. A series of legal briefs filed in 2020 and 2021 by then Deputy Village Attorney Richard Harris for the Village of Port Jefferson accused several business entities owned by George Wallace of violating local sign ordinances, according to documents reviewed by TBR News Media. These entities allegedly failed to apply for permits and displayed signs of prohibited type, size, and material. In other words, law just doesn't apply in this particular case. There were two other signs in Trump We Trust is the sign that we're talking about now, and there was also Impeach Cuomo back in the days when Cuomo was in power. The charges did not pertain to the banner's political content, which is protected under the First Amendment right to free speech. Now, in July 2022, the Honorable Tara Higgins, judge of the Village Justice Court, ruled in favor of George Wallace. She's a registered Republican, because of course she is. And she said that the village's arguments defending sign ordinances regarding aesthetics, safety, and permitting were unconvincing. That's unconvincing. She's not convinced. And because Tara Higgins was not convinced, George Wallace continues to fly his Trump banner, his huge Trump banner. So this has been appealed to the appellate term of the New York State Supreme Court, arguing that the judge's arguments were poorly reasoned and ignored legal precedent regarding a municipality's ability to govern signs. So that's pretty much where things stand now. I know that the new administration in Port Jefferson withdrew the village appeal, saying they wanted a fresh start and plan to take steps against any sign code violations. Well, here we are. The sign's back up, so I guess this is the fresh start where hopefully they will file some kind of complaint or fine these people or whatever they have to do. But it's really imposing. And, you know, if you're going to say that, we should have freedom of speech for all, well, you have to live by that, okay? What you see on that corner, if you go by on any weekend, you will see these so-called pro-life people out there on that corner in front of this eagle statue. This is the guy also that tore down Benjamin Franklin. Thomas Jefferson. Yeah, the town is named after Thomas Jefferson. After 9/11, he tore down the statue of Thomas Jefferson, replaced it with a 9/11 memorial with a big eagle, basically threw Thomas Jefferson into a landfill. And since flying this massive Trump banner, all kinds of right-wing groups have assembled at that corner. A couple of weekends ago, there was a group attacking atheists, which, you know, that to me is kind of a hate crime. If you're going to say that attacking a religion is a hate crime, well, you have to say that attacking people who doubt religion, that's also kind of a hate crime because you're targeting specific people based on their beliefs. Anyway, that's the kind of thing that shows up there. Now, Planned Parenthood. I would love to see Planned Parenthood at that corner, and I want to make that happen. I want them to show up. And let's see if George Wallace actually stands by his supposed respect for First Amendment rights. Or is it only because he owns the property that he's allowed to do these things and nobody else can? Let's say, you know, if the courts can't handle this, maybe the people can. Maybe the people should. So, anyway, continuing with this story from the Village Times, Times Beacon Record News Media, they spoke with a bunch of people July 20th through 21st, right near that place. Now, keep in mind, they're talking to people that frequent the businesses there that don't really care about the massive Trump banner. So they're basically walking under it. Most of these people expressed approval using descriptors such as delighted, ecstatic, and in favor. One woman thanked the reporter for reminding her to take a picture of the banner for her Facebook page. She loved the sign. So sweet, yeah. The general sentiment among those surveyed was that the banner represented an expression of free speech and that the village needed to chill out, as one supporter put it. Hey, you know, yeah, fine and good, but will you chill out when there's a massive Harris sign up there? I doubt it. I doubt it because I've had these conversations. You know, it's you're violating my right to free speech by not letting me say something that's offensive to you, yet I'm constrained from saying things that are offensive to you in return for one reason or another, usually having to do with who has more power. And because this guy has an unprecedented amount of power in that he owns the corner plot where you can hang these signs and doesn't care who he offends, he gets to do whatever he wants. Other shop owners, intimidated. They don't have the same reach. And they don't want to alienate their customers. So they remain quiet. They remain silent. And that's freedom of speech. Yeah. Others in the crowd noted that the village seemed to be enforcing its sign code selectively, singling out the frigate for sanctions while similar style banners are hung undisturbed. I have yet to see a similar banner anywhere in that village, or pretty much any village around. So, show me where they are. Show me where similar type banners that are not pro-Trump banners are hanging. I'd love to know. In 2020 press reports, going back 4 years, Wallace Surrogates. He has surrogates? How do you get surrogates? They voiced the belief of selective enforcement, suggesting that the village's actions were driven solely by the banner's political message. Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe make another banner that says something else and see if it bugs people. Probably would, to a degree. Maybe not for the same reason. But the Trump issue is certainly a divisive one. If you take something that's divisive and you amplify that, then, yeah, you're going to get some reaction. Now, George Wallace has consistently declined to speak with the press. I wonder why. You know, when people cannot defend their own positions in an actual conversation, you have to wonder, how much do they actually believe in those positions? How valued are they? Times Beacon Record did not receive a response either from the frigate's store manager for a comment. So anyway, that's pretty much where things stand. The current mayor, Lauren Shepro, said the village is nonpartisan. The village would never enter into an endorsement situation or sanction the political speech of any candidate. But, you know, it's hard to tell that's not the case when you're driving through town, because this massive banner is bigger than anything else, and it doesn't have the name of the person or the business that is endorsing Trump. No, it just is there. So you wouldn't be wrong to assume. I mean, you would be wrong to assume, but you couldn't be blamed for assuming that, yeah, the village is behind Trump. It's childish. It really is. And it's just another way of kind of just annoying people enough where stays in the news. Now, getting to the story itself of now Trump versus Harris, you know, it's getting kind of funny, actually, because Trump is trying to get out of that debate. You know, he is, I think, afraid of debating a former prosecutor who can express herself well, who will call him out for all the crap he spews and do it in a forceful manner. He doesn't like strong women. That's been proven over and over again. He doesn't like being called to account. There is really very little in it for him. I think we can all agree on that. There was an ad that was made last week. Basically, it consists of Trump at one of his rallies. I don't have the exact quote, but saying something to the effect of, they say, I'm a convicted felon who's committed all these crimes, and she's a prosecutor. And after playing that quote, you just hear, I'm Kamala Harris, and I approve this message. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He'll probably sue for copyright infringement or something. Who knows? But anyway, Trump seems to be backing away from his earlier commitment to debate Vice President Kamala Harris, questioning the value of a meetup and saying he probably will debate, but he can also make a case for not doing it, prompting her campaign to say he's scared and making the usual, you know, chicken sound. Trump, in yet another interview with Fox News Channel yesterday, was pressed several times about committing to debating Harris before giving a squishier answer, as he had in recent days. I'm not sure what the Associated Press means by squishier. The Republican former president had been willing to debate President Joe Biden when Biden was the Democratic nominee. After months of suggesting that the president was not mentally up for the matchup or the presidency. But after Biden dropped out of the race and Harris became poised to be the Democratic presidential candidate, Trump has been questioning the terms of the original debate he agreed to with Biden. He has suggested the September 10th debate on ABC News should be moved to a different network, calling ABC, well, altogether now fake news. Yeah. Last week, in a phone call with reporters, Trump was asked if he'd commit to debating Harris at least once. And he responded, oh, yes, absolutely, I'd want to. And he said there was an obligation to debate. Now, in the interview yesterday, host Laura Ingraham repeatedly pressed Trump on whether he would commit to a debate. I want to do a debate, but I also can say this, everybody knows who I am, and now people know who she is. Yeah. He eventually said the answer was yes, I'll probably end up debating. He went on for a minute, saying any debates need to be held before early voting starts in states, and then he added the answer is yes, but I can also make a case for not doing it. Now, as you recall, he has skipped debates before, including all the 2024 Republican presidential primary debates. He initially didn't participate after suggesting the timing was too early and then questioning the venue of another before eventually making it clear he would not participate in any of those debates. Harris campaign spokesperson Amara Moussa accused Trump of continuing to dodge a face-off with his likely opponent. It's clear from tonight's question dodging. He's scared he'll have to defend his running mate's weird attacks on women or his own calls to end elections in America in a debate against the vice president. Yeah, little things like that. The Republican candidate also sought in the interview Monday to clarify comments he made last week at a conservative event in which he told an audience of Christians that they won't have to vote anymore after he's elected. He urged Christians who he claims don't vote in high numbers to vote just this time, and he said, you won't have to do it anymore. I mean, never in the history of this country has a candidate suggested that people don't need to vote after they vote for him. You won't have to do it anymore. In 4 years, he said, it'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. Oh, my God. I mean, how... Words fail me. He added moments later, in 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good, you're not going to have to vote. What does that mean? What does that mean? I mean, there won't be elections. Everything's just going to be taken care of. We're not going to exist anymore. What? The comments drew alarm from Democrats and pretty much everybody who noted Trump's pattern of using authoritarian language, his earlier comments that he would only be a dictator on day one, and his behavior after losing the 2020 presidential election, in which he refused to accept the results, sought to overturn them. Trump's campaign and supporters offered various explanations for his comments. Yeah, this ought to be good. They don't vote, and I'm explaining that to them. You never vote. This time, vote. I'll straighten out the country. You won't have to vote anymore. I won't need your vote. Right, okay. Ingram asked, I can't believe she's pressing him. Ingram asked if he meant Christians won't need to vote for him because he will only have 4 years in office. And then he started his answer by speaking about voting rates of Christians and gun owners, and Ingram interrupted to ask him again. Trump said, don't worry about the future. That's a great thing to say in this year. You have to vote on November 5th. After that, you don't have to worry about voting anymore. Well, not this year. You think that's what he meant? I don't care because we're going to fix up. The country will be fixed, and we won't even need your vote anymore because, frankly, we will have such love. If you don't want to vote anymore, that's okay. Wow. Okay, you know, I say start early. You know, give him what he wants, and don't vote. Christian Trump supporters and anyone else who listens to what he has to say. Boy, that's a lot. That's a lot to take in. So we have an election over in Venezuela, which kind of echoes what we've seen in this country with Trump. Except it's kind of the opposite. In this case, Venezuela opposition leader Maria Corina Machado said yesterday the country's opposition has 73.2% of the voting tallies from Sunday's election, allowing it to prove election results, it says, give it a victory. Now, the National Electoral Authority, which has been stacked with Nicolas Maduro supporters, not unlike how election supervisors in this country since 2020 are being stacked with Trump supporters, it's a tactic. It's a tactic you use when you want to steal an election. Now, that National Electoral Authority has proclaimed incumbent President Nicolas Maduro the winner of the vote, giving him a third term in office and extending 25 years of Socialist Party rule. Independent pollsters, however, call that result implausible, and opposition leaders and foreign observers urge the Electoral Authority to release vote tallies, which they have not done. The tallies in possession of the opposition, and I'm not sure how possession works here, how the opposition has possession of some, and the Electoral Authority isn't releasing vote tallies and things like that. It's kind of hard to understand how this works. But the tallies in possession of the opposition show the total of 2.75 million votes for Maduro and 6.27 million for his rival, former diplomat Edmundo Gonzalez. Now, those numbers were sharply different to the 5.15 million votes the electoral authority said Maduro had won compared to 4.45 million for Gonzalez. So they seem to have two different versions of the same numbers. And I'd like to know more about how people get their hands on this. Now, witnesses assigned to observe vote counts have a right to a copy of each voting machine's tally, but the opposition said overnight that some witnesses were blocked from following counts and that at other sites the tallies were not printed. The opposition has long warned about whether the vote would be fair, saying decisions by officials and the arrests of opposition staff were meant to create obstacles. The Electoral Authority said just after midnight, Maduro had won 51% of the vote. Later, it proclaimed Maduro president for 2025 to 2031, adding he had won the majority of valid votes. And that little adjective there, valid, that's open to whatever he decides. Now, governments in this country and elsewhere have cast doubts on the results and called for a full tabulation of votes. Independent exit polls pointed to 65% support for Gonzalez and between 14 and 31% backing for Maduro. So that certainly would seem to suggest that he wasn't doing too well. And these numbers that he's presenting, they're kind of maybe a little bit suspicious. Now, at least two people were killed in connection with the vote count or protests. One overnight in the border state of Taquira and another in Maracay on Monday. Protesters gathered in towns and cities across Venezuela on Monday. And protesters also gathered near the presidential palace in Caracas. And Gonzalez has repeatedly warned against bloodshed. But Maduro, whose 2018 re-election is considered fraudulent by the United States and others, said in evening remarks on state television that paid agitators had assaulted electoral agency offices. We know how to confront the situation and how to defeat those who are violent. So the way it's being spun is the protesters are violent and trying to engage in a coup. Now, this just in, I'm reading this as it comes in, Venezuela opposition leader Freddy Superlano has been detained. Yeah, the opposition party, Voluntad Popular, said on Tuesday its national coordinator has been detained. The arrest comes amid a disputed election where both President Nicolas Maduro and opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez have declared victory. So this is disturbing and somewhat familiar, this kind of attitude of ignoring how people vote, ignoring what people say, ignoring what people want. Now, Defense Minister Vladimir Padrino warned against allowing a repeat of the terrible situations of 2014, 2017, and 2019. Anti-government protesters took to the streets those years, and hundreds were killed. So, yeah, that's a story to look at. Hang on, I have coffee here, and Kyle's not in the room, so I have to pause while I drink it. Oh, Kyle's here. Hi, Kyle. How are you doing?
No, I'm not here. I just finished in the factory.
I'm sorry.
I'm off with coffee.
Hang on a second. Your mic was off.
You just do that. You just keep me off. No, I understand. That's pretty much what it is when I am here. So, yeah. No, I'm done with the work that I was doing, and I'm off the clock now, so I actually can't be in here.
Oh, okay. I didn't know those were the rules, but...
Well, they're the new rules.
Okay,
I don't think I'm... You don't really... I know what approval you have from management and what you can speak to and what you can't, but I know you don't want me to get into more than that, so I'm going to leave it at that.
It's only a one-hour show.
I know. We just don't ever have time to talk about me, and I respect that. Goodbye.
Well, it's good to... I just wanted to share some good news with you, but... I guess you can hear it over the radio. The United States is accusing Norfolk Southern of delaying Amtrak trains. And what that means is that the United States is basically backing up Amtrak as far as having priority. Yeah, they accuse Norfolk Southern, one of the country's largest freight railroad companies, of violating federal law by delaying Amtrak passenger trains along the route between New Orleans and New York. In a complaint filed in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, the Justice Department said Norfolk Southern failed to give Amtrak passenger trains preference over freight trains as it is required to do under federal law. Yeah. Norfolk Southern regularly fails to do so, leading to widespread delays that harm and inconvenience train passengers, negatively affecting Amtrak's financial performance and impeding passenger rail transportation. Attorney General Merrick Garland said Americans should not experience travel delays because rail carriers break the law. Our action today alleges that Norfolk Southern violates federal law by failing to give the legally required preference to Amtrak passenger trains over freight trains. Now, the complaint cites several instances where Norfolk Southern's failure to prioritize passenger trains had led to notable delays. That included an episode on January 1st when an Amtrak train just 10 miles from New Orleans was held for nearly an hour because Norfolk Southern dispatchers required it to follow a slow-moving freight train. I've been on trains where this has happened. Either just stuck in the middle of nowhere for hours because a freight train is in front of us, going slowly, maybe even stopped, and you just have to deal with it. And you arrive hours late. Sometimes you arrive the next day. Yeah, it's not really not cool. In another case, an Amtrak train was forced to wait over an hour while three freight trains passed. Now, Tom Crosson is a spokesman for Norfolk Southern. He said in a statement that the company was committed to complying with the law, working together, honoring our commitments, trying new things. Yeah, maybe. Over the past several months with Amtrak, we have focused on the on-time performance of the Crescent passenger train. That's one train. That's one train you're focusing on. We hope to resolve these concerns and continue to make progress together. Sounds sweet. Amtrak's Crescent route starts in New Orleans, includes several stops along the service's Northeast Corridor, according to a Federal Railroad Administration report. Of course, we all know the Northeast Corridor is Amtrak's most used and lucrative area that it operates. There are 11 stops that are considered part of the Crescent Route, including those between Washington, D.C. and New York Penn Station. A Federal Railroad Administration report released this year said that the top cause for delays during the first quarter along the Crescent Route was freight train interference. The report, which detailed the performance and quality of service on intercity passenger trains, said interference accounted for 11,537 minutes in delays from January 1st to March 31st. That's a lot of delays. Now, this is the latest legal challenge for Norfolk Southern, which has faced several lawsuits and investigations after one of its freight trains, you might remember, carrying hazardous materials, derailed in February of 2023 in East Palestine, Ohio, and in an agreement this year with the U.S. Department of Justice and the Environmental Protection Agency, Norfolk Southern agreed to pay $310 million to settle claims and cover the cost of the accident. The company also settled a class action lawsuit filed by residents and business owners in the East Palestine area, agreeing to pay $600 million. So, yeah, well, you know, not sure that's enough to cover all the damage caused by that. It really is hard to drink coffee when you're alone in the studio, but doing our best. Kyle's back. You're hearing me plod through my coffee, huh?
Well, I was thinking to myself as you were talking about something, presumably, and
wow.
And it occurred to me, like, you know, the dirty little secret of community radio is how abusive it is to the producers. You know, like, we never really talk about that. It's always about how great and wonderful the format is, how different it is, but it really does take a toll. Like, I think that community radio should self-examine, mm-hmm, to a certain extent, the toll their own function or dysfunction, whatever you want to characterize the good and the bad of it, like, that it actually does turn people away, and it can be abusive.
Mm.
We don't even get that, like, as listeners or as contributors, or we, like, think of ourselves as learning, like, student volunteers and stuff like that. But I think there are politics, there are aspects of it that are terribly abusive. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Is being 95 degrees in the studio part of that?
I think it's the very tiniest little thread that one in, like, in sort of a logical exercise could pull at and begin to, like, have insight other than what we kind of tell ourselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just thinking about that.
Well, you know, it's true. I don't think people realize it's a volunteer effort. It's something that we...
But it's born out of passion, too.
It
and,
is.
Like, when you're confronted with other people's passions and you have different views or, like, histories, and you're still passionate about being there, but, like, then you're sort of warring passions within this medium, and it's sort of like a sub-medium, or let's say non-commercial medium, even. Like, I'm new to it, I don't know anything, like, I don't know the commercial DJing world or
you
anything like that.
You are selling yourself so short.
No, that's itself, like, my own narcissism, you know, I downplay a lot of that, and you know, that's, you know, disarming, I think, too, to not be, or be, like, kind of specious in that way. And it really is none of anyone else's business when you're talking theory or you're talking, like, fundamentals and, like, conceptually, you know?
I like that we're able to self-examine. That is important, and you'd never be able to do that on a commercial station, not to steer the ship right back to what you're critiquing here. You know, I do love the concept, even though it can be painful sometimes.
And it's like keeping up appearances or something. I don't know what it's called in non-commercial radio, like what people talk, like how they talk about their presence and their filtering, I think, for the audience. But I think there is that thing of, like, well, we want to be encouraging people that this is a better way in its difference and travails, challenges, the work of it as a contributor to a non-commercial station or a volunteer producer or even staff member, maybe to a slightly lesser extent, but certainly coming into it, you might not, it's counterintuitive to realize, like sort of some of the things you might come up against that would make that positivity that you really want to encourage people. Because, of course, when you're pitching, when you have a pledge drive, like a fundraising, you want to be positive about it, right?
You want
and
to be honest.
Important.
I think you want to be
yeah.
honest.
Well, I think sometimes they can go into, like, the fear realm, but the best way is to be like, this is a great place. Come be here. You can be on air. Like, support it. Sometimes it does get into, like, hey, this is the last week. We really want to get this new piece of equipment. That's a little different. It can be a little bit more uncertain or precarious or
right.
fearful. But I don't think it's to scare people or anything like that. But I think in what is the preponderance of it is this sort of happy, good place is that it is work. There are passionate decision makers and contributors who themselves don't necessarily always agree on how to steer the ship.
Oh, like hopefully not. Hopefully not, because out of conflict comes, you know, innovation and new things. You know, like what happened with the Democrats over the past few weeks? There was conflict. There was all kinds of panic, and nobody knew what was going to happen. But it was democracy. It turned into something much better. We were talking about it right here weeks ago. This is an opportunity. And when you discuss things openly, when you reveal some of the rough edges and you open yourself up to people to come in with their ideas, you get something better. I don't think that's ever a case where that doesn't happen.
Right. But, of course, it's still even filtered through what people might be familiar with in the language of the format and whatever is on air and how people are tuning in and I think in detail or the like that stuff is a part of the background, the behind stage stuff, and it is a huge undertaking. Everyone can't always bring it either, and there becomes then challenges and you know persuading people who work on a project like that to be their better selves in moments that are very difficult and not public.
Yeah, yeah. No, good point. We are all humans,
and we're not, you know, and to that end, we're not obliged to be here.
That's true.
As you know, we may have been or will be, you know, in any one moment.
We're also not guaranteed to be here.
No.
Can change any moment. In fact, you know, there's a lot of college stations that the university has decided, you know, we don't need you anymore. Here's a website. Go play radio on that, students, and we're going to sell the station to NPR or some Christian group or something like that. Because broadcasting is dead, and it's so not true. Because this kind of broadcasting is very much alive. It's the commercial broadcasting that you know isn't really doing anything new, and there's no reason to listen to it because you can do the same thing on your MP3 player without the commercials. But here, you know, you won't hear a discussion like this on your MP3 player. Probably, it'd be weird if you did. But anybody can join. Anybody can be a part of the station. And I talk about the remaining stations in this country that are non-commercial, run by colleges and universities. You know, it transformed my life. I'll say that. Back in 1977, when I walked into the studio for the first time. It just sort of showed me that, yeah, there's things actually you might be good at that maybe you can participate in. But regardless, you know, more people to, like, share experiences with, and I think that still exists to this day. I do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and it doesn't have to be one or the other person. It's a constantly changing thing, and I think even debates about, like, what music is on air or what conversation is on air, as though that it can't change or won't in time is sort of the height of absurdity. And that's how these things, I think, can wrap people up who are passionate about speaking and their ability to express themselves and maybe have too much tunnel vision for that world, not seeing and not denying the ability to appreciate what all else is out there and what space, you know, mm-hmm. others could fill.
Yeah.
But it's not always a party, you know. It's and
on Saturday it is.
Well, when it
Saturday,
feels like an
Saturday's
obligation.
A party,
yeah.
When Lister's in town, but yeah, but it's not always a party. You're right. There are, it's hard. It's something. And you know, we do good things and bad things. I'll tell you though, I've learned so much about music by being at a radio station, because you know, all of a sudden, not only when I joined did I have access to tens of thousands of vinyl records, but all these people from different backgrounds and cultures that were sharing their music that I never ever had any inkling of before going to Stony Brook. And Stony Brook is a great gathering point for all these different cultures. I don't want to say melting pot because I don't like the concept of melting pots. I like the idea of patchwork quilts and people expressing themselves and remaining true to where they come from and what they were brought up on and making that a part of our culture. And I think that's what USB kind of personifies there. We just we play a great variety. You know, there's going to be blues after us in a few minutes, and who knows what comes after that, but you'll hear things from all around the planet. And you won't do that in very many places. So to me, it changed my outlook on the world, who I was as a person, gave me inspiration to pursue other projects, and I just hope it does that for other people, and I hope it does that well into the future, and that the station continues to exist and
but
doesn't turn into a website.
It never felt like an abusive environment for you.
I don't think abusive really would. If anybody did the abusing, I did the abusing. If anybody did the abusing,
everybody has different experiences of it.
I got the FBI to raid the radio station. I'm not going to tell that story now.
So you were handing out the abuse.
Still? Some people might say that, but okay. Yeah, life is weird sometimes. It really is. But what an incredible place.
And now the climate does it for us.
And now the climate is killing us all. Oh my God.
All right, I'm leaving.
Are you leaving? Okay.
Yeah,
well, thank you for this discussion because I was just reading news stories.
Yeah.
And it's kind of boring.
Ever pointless.
I almost tuned to a different station. Thank you. Thank you for the coffee, and thank you for the factory work out there. Make sure you turn the lights off. We only have a couple minutes left. I do want to invite people to write to us, otw@2600.com, with your ideas as to how this show can be better. What you like, what you don't like. Same thing about the station. If you listen to WUSB, and I do suggest that you keep listening to WUSB, not just right after us, but throughout the week, and share what you think is good, what you think is bad, what you would like to see, and we'll make sure that's passed along. It's always good to look at how you do things. If you're involved in projects, always self-analyze and listen to critique and all that. Okay, do we have time for Israel getting involved in yet another war? We do? Okay. So here's what happened. There was Syrian airstrikes on the Golan Heights. Yeah, now, this was reported over the weekend, it basically was not reported as much. That those strikes, those missile strikes from Syria, from Lebanon. A lot of countries there, I'm sorry. Lebanon, from Hezbollah, the rulers of Lebanon, fired missiles into the Golan Heights, which has been occupied by Israel since the 1967 war. And that was in response to an attack that Israel launched against Hezbollah leaders. So everything is a response to everything else. So, you know, when you read in the media, this was a response to this, well, odds are that was a response to something else as well. So you're never going to get, you know, the full story just by reading a few headlines. Now, okay, so Hezbollah struck their own admission. They struck some targets in the Golan Heights. But they said the strike that killed the kids on the soccer field, that wasn't them. that was apparently somebody else. Yeah, hard to believe. Not the best lie in the world. And I think everybody pretty much saw through that. I take issue with the way differing stories were reported. We're not really going to have time to get into this, but pretty much the same day, Israel had launched an attack on the Palestinian territory and hit a hospital and killed a whole bunch of children. And listening, reading the news on that day, it was rightfully reported that these kids were killed on the soccer field by a Hezbollah missile. But the Israeli story, Israel striking a hospital filled with children and killing a large number of them, that was children getting caught in the violence. Almost like they weren't supposed to be there. It's their fault. You know, as far as I can tell, the kids are dead in both cases, and it's a horror in both cases, and should be reported as such. That, to me, is disturbing evidence of the press being slanted, even when you think it's not. Kyle, we only have
Did you tell them?
I don't know what I'm supposed to tell them, but we only have a couple of seconds.
Yeah, this is about Hamas, right?
No, it wasn't Hamas. This was Hezbollah.
Hezbollah.
It's
sorry.
So complicated.
I got it mixed up.
To make it even more complicated, the people who died aren't Israeli citizens. They're occupied people who want to be Syrian, actually. You can see Damascus from the Golan Heights. But somehow they still have allegiance to Israel. So the whole thing is just nuts and crazy, but there's so much we don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's circular.
Circular. Hey, we got to go. Kyle's pleasure talking to you. And again, write to us, otw@2600.com. See you all next time. Good night.
Maybe.
The truth of life is the greatest gift. But I don't think I can.